place is dangerous.
All right, let's test this stupid microphone. And it's kind of new. It's actually kind of inexpensive, but this doesn't actually pay. I don't know if you know that. There's some people here already. Okay, well, I'll be back in a few minutes to do the open mic, so you guys can figure out what that means. All right, I'll be back in a few minutes. Go get some coffee. Maybe I'll order a pizza or two for us. There's not that many of us. Just, when you're running out of money and everything is going to shit, you're heading for a brick wall. That's when you hit the accelerator, I guess. All right, I'll be back in a minute. Ciao. All right, it is 7:15, or as my phone says, 19:15, because that's how I roll. All right, we have a couple of things for sure, and one of them is relatively long, so I might have trouble reading it, but I will do my best. We have new friends, which means we have new listeners for an episode or two until you guys get tired of my squeaky, horrible voice. Anyway, season 3. So we've skipped many months. Let me see, November, so... Can you close the stupid door? I mean, goodness sake. Alright, let me see. So it was November of... Anyway, let's just say it's been a while. We'll just call this, we'll call this season 3. We'll try to do what we were doing Wednesdays in the 7:15 time slot. That gives me time to get here. I'm under no obligation to... Okay, so we've got a couple things for sure. If I can figure out how to get Theo's music, we'll even have some guest background music. I'm not 100% sure that I can do it without it sounding terrible. I've, tried a few things. We'll see what happens. Anyway, let me see. So we have new people that have forwarded me some stuff to read. So one of them is named Gina Etheridge, and another is Lisa Morris. She wrote, I'm not sure when, maybe last November, if I remember. We were talking about this, and she actually did a slight update because I made a suggestion. I'm patting myself on the back here as a kind of sort of shadow editor. But anyway, she wrote this... I was enthralled. I like this story. Anyway. And it's kind of long. And I told her that... No, you read it. I said that. No, I don't want to read it. You read it. It's really long. You don't know. I suck at this. If it's longer than 5 minutes and I flub, I have to start over. Ugh. I don't know. I don't know. But anyway... Maybe I'll be fine reading it. We'll see what happens. Let me see. Like I said, Theo, I met someone whose name is Theo. He plays piano. He generously said I can use his music. Seriously, can you close the door? The door? We'll see if we can't get the door closed. Look, I know it's warm, and I know you want to save money on air and stuff, but come on. All right, where were we? So Theo's music, we'll see if I can't get good quality stuff, otherwise I'll just play it through this analog tape recorder and see if we don't hear the buttons click. Let me see, what else are we doing? I mentioned Gina. She wrote a poem specifically for me, quote unquote, but also specifically for this podcast. Have I mentioned my name is Rob and this is open mic night Wednesday? I see you guys are just ignoring me. That's fine. That's fine as always. Maybe I won't buy you fuckers pizza. Whatever. Anyway, because she wrote it specifically for the podcast and we've waited like months and months, and I started talking about the podcast in present tense, which was a little bit of a tease, and then people kind of started volunteering, and so I guess I had to bring it back. Anyway, hi people, hi new people. Hey, if you follow us from Spotify, I can, it's better for me. I need 100 of you. I have 2. All right. Anyway, so I'm going to read this. I'm going to read Gina's thing. If I can find the hymnal, I mean, it's been over a year. It's a long time to keep a hymnal hanging around. If I can find the hymnal, I'll read some lesbian love poetry, obviously, that I love to do. Let's see. So we'll do Gina's thing, then I'll be back after, obviously. Let me go get some water. I think Jill has... You're still Jill, right? I think Jill has some peanut butter and jelly squares. Oh, I'm sorry, that's right. We're calling them peanut butter and jelly quarters because she's selling them for 30 cents. Well, it was a quarter, but now inflation. Inflation, I say. You can buy the whole thing for a buck, or you can get them for 30 cents each. That's how life is. Alright, so first is this Gina Etheridge. I think it's just called The Cormorant. And I'll be back in a minute to read that. Okay. This is The Common Cormorant by Gina Etheridge. The Common Cormorant. He's just a common cormorant, not a silly sycophant. He has his own opinions, yes he does. No ideas to supplant, no working on a slant, not agenda to ensure, just some water to endure. His wings are dripping wet, so we wait, spread your wings, oh clowny one. They will dry while we wait. Is he just a common clown with a cape or a crown who doesn't want to see you frown? Or is he crying? Do you see into his eyes? When he starts a flying, will he soon be spying? Yes, that's what cormorants do. Dipping and diving, slipping and sliding. That's what cormorants do. Backwards moving, always grooving. So common, so plain, so weird, so sane. That's what cormorants do. He's just a common cormorant. Alright, so that was The Common Cormorant by Gina Etheridge. I will see if she wants you guys to contact her, and if so, I'll put whatever in the show notes. I hope you're enjoying your coffee and your not peace and quiet, because the door's open and because I'm yammering on up here. Okay, so this is going to be a long... Something like 20 minutes, I think, we figured it would take to read. This story is called, it's Wishes for Sunshine by Lisa Morris. And again, her stuff, her contact details will be on will come to me and I'll message her and see if she wants you idiots to contact her. All right, here we go. What would I say? Wishes for sunshine. I'll read it, but don't expect anything. It's really long and I expect to just die of exhaustion. But no, it's really, really good. It's a really good story. The problem is me, not the story, just so you know. Okay. Lisa Morris, Wishes for Sunshine. Sit back. Wishes for Sunshine by Lisa Morris. Starts with a quote from someone named Doreen Virtue. All thoughts create thought forms. When you think about anything, an electrical impulse is released. Its charge gathers into a form that appears clairvoyantly like a soap bubble. The thought form creates, manifests, and attracts that which is similar to it. End quote. Wishes for Sunshine. Susanna stared intently down at the piece of paper in front of her at the kitchen table and reached for a crayon. Over the next few minutes, her picture slowly took shape, and with an appraising, critical eye only a six-year-old can possess, she laid down her crayons and sat back in her chair. She brushed a wisp of stray hair out of her face and sighed, picking up her picture for closer inspection. A fuzzy, blue-gray mass complete with wide, dark eyes and short, twisted horns returned her gaze. I wish you were real, she said softly, gently touching its waxy fur. You could protect me, and nobody would be mean to me ever again. She jumped in her seat as she heard the garage door start to rise, and hurriedly shoved the paper and crayons into the backpack at her feet, pulling out her math homework and pencil instead. 3 + 4 = 7, she whispered, and carefully wrote her answer in her workbook. 2 + 7 = 9. The back door opened and slammed shut, and Susanna winced. She had learned to tell what kind of an evening it would be by how her daddy closed the door when he got home from work. If he shut it normally, they would have dinner, he would help her with her homework, and maybe there would be time for a board game or a couple episodes of cartoons. He would tuck her into bed and kiss her forehead goodnight, making sure to leave the door open just a crack the way she liked it. In the morning, she would have breakfast and lunch waiting for her, all packed up and ready for school. If he slammed the back door, well, it wasn't pleasant. He would lock himself in his bedroom with a bottle of something that smelled horrible. Sometimes she could hear him talking on the phone and yelling or crying or throwing things. She would make herself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, do her homework as best she could and as quietly as she could, and put herself to bed. In the morning, she would get up early, make her own breakfast and lunch, making sure she was on time for the bus, and hope that her daddy had a better day at work. He tried to be a good daddy, she reasoned. He was just sad all the time, and work made him sadder. She did her best to stay small and quiet and out of the way when he was in a bad mood, but sometimes she couldn't help but be noticeable, like the time she needed new shoes for school, or the time she accidentally tripped on the porch stairs outside and snagged a hole in her tights. Lately, though, there had been more of the bad days. Susanna didn't know why. Her mom had left them when Susanna was just 4 years old, her daddy told her. She just didn't want kids, he had said. So for the past couple of years, it had been just the two of them. But still, it had been 2 years. She barely remembered her mom. And she wasn't sad anymore, so why was he? Hi, Daddy, she said carefully and glanced up as her father entered the kitchen. Why isn't your homework done yet? Kyle asked, ignoring her greeting. It's almost done, Daddy. Just 5 more questions. There was a lot today, she replied. Kyle grunted in response, opened the small cabinet above the refrigerator, and grabbed a half-empty bottle of Wild Turkey bourbon. Susanna quickly averted her gaze and turned back to her homework, while Kyle stalked out of the kitchen and down the hall, slamming his bedroom door shut. A few minutes later, her homework finished, she quietly packed her workbook back into her backpack and carried it over to the back door, where she hung it up on a low hook on the wall. Her daddy had installed that hook last year when she started kindergarten just for her, so she would always know where her backpack was. He really did try hard to be a good daddy sometimes. After finishing her peanut butter and jelly sandwich, Susanna made sure to gather up all the crumbs into her napkin and throw them away. She made sure the counters were clean, her plate, and the knife she used were in the dishwasher, and quietly went upstairs, making sure to avoid the spots where she knew the steps creaked. One time, she hadn't been very careful, and her daddy had immediately let her know that she was being too loud. "Settle the fuck down, Susanna! You're giving me a headache! Go to bed now!" he had yelled. That was 2 years ago, not long after her mom had died. At least I should think it was four. Sorry. Later that night, she lay in bed, freshly showered, teeth brushed, and clothes laid out for tomorrow. She had to get things ready in advance so she'd have time to pack some food for school in the morning. One time she didn't, and her teacher had noticed her sitting there without any lunch and made some of her classmates share their lunches with her. That was the worst. Nobody had forgotten about it. Billy had given her a quarter of a dry bologna sandwich. Amy had given her a package of fruit snacks. Madison gave her a couple brown apple slices. And Dustin had given her three dried out baby carrots. Gross. She closed her eyes and tried to fall asleep. Downstairs, she heard her daddy rummaging around in the kitchen. Glasses clinked, cabinets slammed closed, the microwave beeped, and a kitchen chair scraped against the tile floor. This was a good sign, she thought. It meant he wouldn't drink so much of the gross brown stuff that he'd fall asleep and wake up late, and that meant that maybe tomorrow would be better. The next morning flew by for Susanna, at least until it came to lunchtime. She had remembered to pack herself some food. She had remembered to pack herself some food as if she'd forget after last time, and neatly arranged everything she'd packed in front of her. Juice box, a banana, a little snack bag with five not dried out baby carrots, and some ham and cheese rolled up in a small tortilla. Well, look who... Oh, this is another person talking. Sorry. Well, look who actually remembered her lunch today, Amy sneered as she passed by Susanna's desk. Susanna looked up at Amy and said defiantly, "It was just the one time, a whole year ago." "Seems like yesterday to me," Amy said in a sing-song voice. "Nice juice box," she said, and squeezed it, shooting a stream of sticky juice onto Susanna's shirt. "Hey, stop it," Susanna yelped. Amy stuck out her tongue while quickly glancing toward their teacher and continued on her way back to her own seat. Susanna dabbed at her shirt with her napkin, hoping it wouldn't take too long to dry. Once lunchtime was over, Susanna put her lunchbox back inside her backpack, her fingers brushing across the picture of the monster she had created yesterday afternoon. "I wish you were real," she thought. "You could make Amy leave me alone." The bell rang, signaling the end of lunch, and Susanna hurried back to her seat. That night, when Kyle came home from work, his demeanor was much improved from the previous night. Upon seeing his daughter busily working on her homework at the kitchen table, he called out, "Hi, Susanna, sunshine." She smiled cautiously and said, "Hi, Daddy." He hadn't called her sunshine in a long time, but it was a good sign. "I have a surprise for you, sunshine," he continued. Susanna put down her pencil and looked at him wide-eyed. "We're going to be moving," Kyle stated triumphantly. Susanna's mouth fell open. "I got a promotion at work, sweetheart, and they want me to work at a bigger office. So, in a few weeks, we'll be moving to Chicago. Isn't that exciting?" "Where's Chicago? Where will we live? Where will I go to school?" Whoa, one question at a time, sunshine. "Chicago is here." Here, he pulled out his phone and showed her on his Maps app. "And we are here." "Whoa, that's pretty far." "It sure is, sunshine. We will probably have an apartment for a little while until we can get settled in. I don't know about schools yet, but you can do your schoolwork online until we figure it out." "Online? You mean I can stay home?" "For a little while, sunshine, sure." Suzanne's nose wrinkled and she looked up at Kyle. "Do they have anything fun to do in Chicago?"
Oh, yes, lots and lots, Kyle replied. There are museums, zoos, parks, a big aquarium, lots of stores, and ball games and fireworks over the water. What water? Lake Michigan, sweetheart. There are really big old-timey sailboats on the lake, too. Whoa, her eyes widened again. Everything will be different, Sunshine. You'll see. Everything will be better. Sorry about that. 3 months later, Susanna stared out her big bedroom window, watching the traffic below her. Living in the city would surely take some more getting used to. It was so noisy compared to their little house back in southern Indiana. If there weren't car horns, there were sirens, or the sound of a subway or train squealing to a stop. Her daddy had been right, though. Everything was better in Chicago. Every weekend so far, he took her to a museum or zoo or park or did something fun. She could see the fireworks over Navy Pier from their apartment, and even better, he didn't have as many bad days anymore. And when he didn't lock himself away with the stuff that made him even sadder. Last month, he had even hired a nice lady to come over, to come and go over her schoolwork with her for a few days a week. Susanna liked her. Her name was Chloe, and she went to college there in Chicago and lived in another apartment building down the street. Daddy said she was a tutor, whatever that meant. Chloe said she was just trying to earn money and pay for art school. Susanna didn't care about the details. Susanna didn't care about the details because Chloe was really nice, had really long, pretty hair, as red as an apple, and even helped her with her drawings. A hand turning her doorknob brought her attention back, and she turned around expectantly. "Here's a tape you asked for, Susie Q," Chloe said brightly. "What you need it for?" "Thanks, I'm hanging up my drawings. Want to watch?" "Sure, for a little bit. Your dad should be home soon with dinner." "Oh, I hope it's pizza." "Maybe. I don't know. But once he gets here, I gotta split. I have a test tomorrow morning I gotta study for." "Aw, can't you stay and eat with us, please?" "Sorry, kiddo. Maybe next time. Tell you what, I'll talk to your dad, and maybe you and me can have some girl time this weekend. Just the two of us. We can go get our hair and nails done. I can show you my art studio." Chloe's voice trailed off. "Yes! Yes, 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 yes!" Susanna bounced with excitement. "Ha, ha, ha. Okay. I'll ask him when he gets here." Susanna raced over to Chloe, threw her arms around her waist in a quick hug, then ran back over to her bed. Crouching down, she pulled a brightly colored folder out from in between her mattress and box spring. "It keeps them flat this way," she said, glancing over at Chloe. The older girl nodded once in understanding and watched Susanna as she taped a dozen different pictures up on her wall around her bed. "This one's the best one," Susanna said, pulling out the picture of the blue-gray monster she had drawn months earlier. Very carefully, she taped it up over the head of her bed, then hopped down to assess her work. "He's kind of scary-looking," Chloe remarked. "Yes," Susanna agreed. "He protects me and keeps me safe." "Oh, does he now?" Chloe smiled. "Well, he seems like he's doing a good job of it." "Yes! After I drew him, we moved here, and Daddy isn't sad all the time anymore." Chloe was saved from having to respond by the sound of the apartment door closing. "Daddy!" Susanna raced past Chloe and launched herself at her dad, who had thankfully, just moments before, set a pizza box down on the kitchen counter. Kyle scooped her up, kissed her cheek, and carefully set her back down, grinning. "Looks like someone's happy I'm home," he said. "You happy to see me or the pizza?" Susanna looked up at him, eyes wide. "Both," she proclaimed. Chloe breezed past the pair, slinging her satchel over her shoulder. "Hey, Kyle, I told Susie Q that maybe we could have a girls' day this weekend?" Kyle glanced at her and she clarified, "I thought maybe we could do some girly stuff. You know, get our nails done, maybe go to lunch. I could show her my art studio, maybe give her a lesson." "Sounds like a good time. You two have fun," he assented as Susanna again wrapped herself around him. "Great. I'll text you with the particulars once he gets closer. Bye, guys," Chloe called over her shoulder and exited the apartment. "So, Sunshine, tell me about your day." That's Kyle talking. Saturday rolled around, windy and blustery and gray and wet. Still, Susanna was excited. Chloe had promised to come get her that morning and take her to brunch. Brunch, what a silly word. It was halfway between breakfast and lunch, Chloe had explained. Susanna just giggled. Brunch, munch, brunch, munch, bunches of brunch. The clock in the hall chimed 10 a.m., and Susanna planted herself in front of her bedroom window. She had a great view of the building's entrance below her. Even though it was pretty far down, she could see everybody who came and went, especially Chloe. And sure enough, there she was, bright hair whipping behind her in the wind like a flag. I promise you guys, I read this a few times so that I could do it, but... Susanna bounced excitedly and sprang to her feet, grabbing her jacket and shoving her arms into the sleeves as she ran toward the door. It's a little chime. Stop chiming me. Susanna bounced excitedly and sprang to her feet, grabbing her jacket and shoving her arms into the sleeves as she ran toward the door. She nearly ran into her father on the way, and Kyle stumbled downwards half a step, trying to avoid a collision. Whoa, careful there, Sunshine. Sorry, Susanna offered. Chloe's almost here. Kyle chuckled and reached out to tuck a stray hand of her hair behind her ear. Have you decided what color to paint your nails? Blue, duh, she said. Of course, I should have known, he laughed. Susanna bounced again, this time impatiently. It didn't usually take Chloe this long to take the elevator up to her floor. After waiting 15 minutes, Kyle texted Chloe asking if she was okay. No reply. He then called her, no answer. Susanna's little face scrunched up, her nose reddening, and her eyes starting to water. I saw her, Daddy. I saw her come in the building. Where is she? I don't know, Susie Q. Maybe she got held up talking to somebody. Susanna sighed. 15 minutes turned into an hour turned into two, and two turned into three, and still no responses from Chloe. Susanna had already given up and helped herself to a piece of cold pizza. So much for munch brunch. After 6 hours of intermittently calling and texting Chloe with no response, Kyle called the police. He knew he'd be told to wait 24 hours before trying to file a missing persons report, but he didn't care. It wasn't that he had any unprofessional interest in the girl himself, but good babysitters were hard to find, and Susanna genuinely liked her. And without a mother figure in the picture, well, Kyle preferred to keep her around if at all possible. Susanna went to bed that night, feeling a little numb and sad. She never even noticed that her favorite picture above her bed was now blank. The next morning, Susanna woke bright and early and padded into the kitchen to make herself some Eggos for breakfast. Kyle was already up and watching TV, but quickly switched it off when he heard his daughter rummaging around. You didn't have to turn it off, Susanna said glumly. I already heard what they said. Kyle winced. Susanna, I... She's gone, the little girl said matter-of-factly, and shoved two waffles in the toaster. Sunshine, Kyle tried again, but Susanna turned her back to him. I heard the sirens. I saw them stop outside the door outside. I saw the ambulance. Kyle sighed and ran his hand through his hair. You're right, he admitted. They found her last night in a custodial closet. Susanna turned and looked up at him. A supply closet. A cleaning supply closet is what he said. She turned back around, still waiting for her waffles to cook. When she spoke again, her voice was soft and sad. But why, Daddy? I liked her. I don't know, sweetheart. Sometimes bad things happen to good people. I'm sure she's in a better place now. A better place would be here, Susanna said flatly, and Kyle had no response. She was right, of course. The toaster dinged and popped the waffles up. And Susanna jumped. Kyle watched her slather margarine and syrup over her breakfast and reached for his phone. He scrolled through the latest headlines, pausing when he saw the latest update on Chloe. This is a quote from his phone, I suppose. It says, authorities are tight-lipped about the nature of the victim's death, but are investigating potential connections to a child trafficking operation. Anyone with information is encouraged to come forward and submit a tip to the Chicago Police Department or anonymously through Crime Stoppers. Kyle drew his breath in sharply. Oh, God, he thought. She almost took Susanna. He glanced at his daughter, who was enthusiastically shoving sticky forkfuls of waffle in her mouth. When she was done, she placed her plate and fork in the sink and headed back to her bedroom to get dressed. She glanced up at the picture above her bed. She glared up at the picture above her bed. Quote, maybe I should have asked you to protect Chloe, too. The monster in the picture stared unseeingly back at her. A small, almost imperceptible tangle of apple-red hair wound around one of his claws.
Wow, okay, so here's how I got some freaking water. Okay, sorry about that. I didn't mean to, like, yell into the microphone. Sorry. Oops. So, 20 minutes. But, that was a good story, no? Just me? I'm the only one there? You guys? Why do you guys act so... Are there actually no people here and I'm just in a car by myself recording into a phone? Is this a dream? Is this real life? Alright, so... Let me see. I'm gonna have to try to get... I'm gonna try to get permission to read some more stuff. And I'm gonna go to the back of the room over there and click my fingers and get ready to read my own story that I wrote specifically for the podcast, because I promised I would if I had any volunteers, and then I had volunteers, so that's what I get, I guess. Also, I'm still working on this Theo thing with the music. We'll see what happens. And anyway, that was, let's see, Wishes for Sunshine by Lisa Morris. And I'll be back in a few minutes after I wash my face and find some stuff. I also have to locate the hymnal. I'm sure it's here somewhere. All right, I'll be back. No, really, just a few minutes. Okay. Alright, I temporarily called this Perils of Bioengineering, but it really doesn't have a title, because I wrote it last night until my hand was sore, and it was dark anyway, so I couldn't write in the dark. Alright, when I wrote it in ink with my expensive German pen, it was like 10 pages, but I only do one side, so... Alright, Perils of Engineering by me. Let's see if I can cut this off here. Perils of Engineering by R. Wesley Edwards. In a tinker town outside a mining colony in the Rift, a man at the bar noticed my straight uniform and bought me a drink. We talked about women like two guys at any bar in the galaxy, maybe from the beginning of the history of bars. So I talked about the old lady and how we met in the service together. His name was Mac or Buddy, I don't remember which. And then he asked what I was doing all the way out here. So I told him the story I've been telling for the past 2 decades. It all started in a landing shuttle. We were to check out a colony gone quiet on the largest natural satellite of a gas giant somewhere out there. There were just the three of us. Before we initiated landing, and even before Sally deployed the gliding wings, I was already getting back alarming readings from the side of the QUETS colony. For one thing, no bio readings, nothing at all in the infrared, and of course, the signal beacon was the only active transmitter in the whole gas giant system. This mission was already looking bleak, and we hadn't yet even entered atmosphere. Charles leaned over my console to reach for something. He saw the numbers and whistled. You didn't need to be an expert to see that it was bad. In fact, it was so self-evidently bad, I began to think, why send organics like us anyway? The android ships were more efficient, and, if you'll pardon me for saying so, also more disposable. Furthermore, why even risk ground units at all? Biological or no, plasma-burning mech ships could gloss this pony and no feet at all need touch dirt. But we have our orders. We have our orders, Charlie said, echoing my thoughts with a harsh sigh.
Why do you think they're sending us, Chuck? Space if I know, he swore. He gestured and I handed him a cigarette. He motioned, too, and I gave him another. He handed the first to Sally and she nodded thanks to me. We landed a few clicks away and in the shadow of the giant. So we stowed and bunked over for a few hours. I beat Sally at backgammon, so she went on to win against Charles, who then played me and I won again. So then we played poker and I let Sally win, so she took me to her bunk and we left Chuck on guard duty. She had a lot of energy that night. Part of this was, of course, that for us it was only mid-afternoon, but another part was the cigarette I'd handed Charles first was dosed with Phi, and probably I should have dosed myself too, but I don't smoke before sex. When we woke up later with the unnecessary klaxon and Chuck on the intercom being euphemistic and more than a little condescending, we wiped each other down and dressed about as fast, no faster than it's taking me to discuss it here. We met with Chuck in control and the three of us did safety checks and strapped on our ray guns and no slip. These are the chocolate colored ones, boots. Chuck handed out newly fabricated mission jackets. Mine had the red sleeves of engineering. Sally, all black, sleeves and all, for security. Charles, Captain Charles, had gold sleeves, of course. Sally punched me a few times and we started sparring, but Charles did one of those older person slash superior officer things with his face, and he cleared his throat so we came to attention. Whatever, Chuck. Fucking virgin. Protocol dictates security lead the party, but protocol also dictates command personnel never leave the vehicle, so we broke both these traditions, Captain Charles leading and Sal taking up the rear. She kept poking me in my ass, too, so I sent her some lewd private coder messages. She only got more juvenile swatting at my butt and coding back 8008. Charles pretended to ignore our childish crap. We marched to the side of the colony radio. This is usually a building with 100 offices and a snack shack. Usually encountered before the power station, and both of these are outskirts jams. No private vehicles. You gotta take a company shuttle. Still no life signs. The radio campus was, of course, deserted. At least there's no bodies, Chuck said, and Sal and I both echoed the sentiment. By now, we were being professional, and not just because Colony Vid, assuming it was functional, could see and track us. The situation warranted, but, too, it was beginning to feel a little bleak. Where is everybody? Sally sang out as she and Chuck forced an outside door on a building. The mains were off inside, but the backup generators were working, so I was able to get the lights going. We were inside the building, but immediately, as I pushed and tinkered with what was needed, and the hum and the glow of power and lights came on, a loud, blood-curdling scream came from outside. Quick-thinking, Sally slammed the outside door, and she and Chuck held it with their bodies while I futzed with the godforsaken antique of a fucking lock to seal the suddenly not-all-that-strong door shut. Outside, a large thing, a creature, was slamming itself against the door. We could see it via surveillance cams and monitors I'd only activated moments before, with the lights and security locks. Then four more joined. These came from around the building. Pterodactyls? Charles and Sally both said the word simultaneously, so I came over to see. I was the only one with a degree in anything that would use that word anyway. What the hell? I said, in obvious disbelief, as several more joined the group at the door, a mere meter and a half away. We could hear them trying to enter the building. Could we even get back to the ship? Check your charges, Chuck said to us ominously. Was he thinking we'd shoot our way back? Captain, I said, what about a turkey shoot? Sally nodded and I started disconnecting wires from a workstation in one of the office rooms. Chuck finally assented as I was nearly finished stripping wires. If I could convert the emergency power to DC and shunt it through long enough wires, we could mow down, more like burn through, these prehistoric monsters and, if lucky, get through them all. But then one of us, Sally, being security, would need to go back and bring our lander closer. As I finished modding the captain's gun, I said, we should all go. I mean, after. Sally didn't say anything or nor move, and Chuck surprised us both, I think, by nodding agreement. But I didn't say that, he said. We positioned ourselves down the hall a bit, and the captain gave me a nod, and I unlocked the outside door. On a monitor, we watched as more flying great creatures joined the first group. They were still beating at the door. I just disengaged the bolt, and the door virtually snapped open. If Sally and Chuck hadn't started firing, I remain convinced they'd have got us. I was going to wait for something, for some silly reason, but they were fast, those creatures. I joined in, and all three weapons produced a plasma stream that melted through monsters and really just made a right mess out of that hall. When it seemed we'd gotten most of the monsters, I pulled the wires, and we were all back to default charges in our ray guns, and boy, did we run. As we exited the building, I heard as the captain and Sally's weapons discharged, but I didn't see what they were firing at. I was just flat out running. Back at the lander, we got in without doing any safety checks, and Sally virtually tore my away suit off. I did manage to spare the mission jacket. We helped Chuck, and then Chuck and I helped Sally. And we took off. The monitor's alive with this cloud of monsters outside the vehicle. Back at the base on Satellite C, we were remotely debriefed and then exhausted, but I gotta say, not tired. I played bartender, and the three of us smoked my cigs and got blasted on whatever the last group had left behind. It was months and months later when the story eventually came back. A certain bioengineering scientist among the colonists did a series of sloppy experiments. I guess they found his notes. Anyway, after Sally, Chuck, and I got back to sea, the regulars, the Space Marines, were sent in, and they retrieved all the histories and records. They couldn't even find all the glyphs, the mind data files. So a lot of the colonists were just gone as though they never existed. In the end, the three of us were promoted, but effectively retired. The service still calls on Sally and me a couple times a year, and then we meet up with Captain, now Ambassador Charles, and we wear our straight uniforms and ribbons and look pretty on vid.
Oh, hey. Ah. Hi. So, alright, that was not that long, actually, but it was half as long as Lisa's offering. That's fine. Alright, okay. So, I'm gonna get an iced coffee, and I'll sit with you guys for a few minutes, except for Theo, who's gonna play us something up here. It's called, I think it's called Rio Lobo Ride. Anyway, Theo generously volunteered a piece of music for us, so I'll come back up after to thank everyone and remind y'all to tip your barista. Which is Jill, by the way. And buy her damn peanut butter and jelly sandwich quarters. In fact, you can do that right now while I mess around with things and we set up for Theo. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Theo. Thank you. All right, so that was Theo's playing Rio Lobo Ride. And you can find more Theo on Instagram, Theo Piano. And, all right, whoa, I guess that's all for today, this week. Welcome back to me, I guess. That's right. Welcome back, Rob. Did I mention my name's Rob? Did I mention this is a open mic night? No wonder you guys aren't participating. I had to bring people in from afar. I swear, if we don't close that door, maybe we'll close the door next week. Anyway, I wanted to say thanks to the volunteers who let me use your media. I have Gina Etheridge, who wrote us The Common Cormorant, specifically for this little presentation. I have Lisa Morris, who contributed Wishes for Sunshine, which, by the way, I love that story. And let me see, obviously we have Theo, so Theo Piano on Instagram, donated his playing of Rio Lobo Ride. You can find him, of course, and all of us, coincidentally, on Instagram. I am Common Cormorant. Anyway, yeah, just find me, and you can see me talking to the others, because that's all I do on my... Oh no, if you find me on Instagram... I'm pretty much ignoring that Instagram exists. Find me on Threads or something, and I'll introduce you to the others if they're not hiding. Let me see. If you're wondering about the hymnal read, unfortunately, I seem to have disappeared mine. I don't know if you guys know, but I was in kind of an accident, and my car that I called Squeaky got kind of totaled, and so now I have a car that I call Candy. Anyway, there's a little bit of shuffling going on, and I kind of have to look around and find the hymnal. But that's good. I'll put the details in the show notes, and then this gives you guys a chance to buy, order your own, or look for it, whatever. Find it at your Barnes & Noble. And then you guys have time to get your copy for next week, and then I'll just read twice as many next week. All right, thanks everyone, and... don't forget to order your copy of the hymnal. Good night. Enjoy the rest of your week. And don't forget to tip your barista, who is Jill, behind you and over there to my left, your right. All right. That's all.
I am reality's whore.